Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to MotoGPOD, the podcast about motorcycle road racing. I'm Bob Hayes, your host, and today is Friday, the 21st of October, 2005. We've got a really good show today, chock full of interesting stuff. First of all, there's going to be a preview of this weekend's MotoGP race in Istanbul, Turkey. Then I have an interview. Oh my god, wow, another voice on the show besides mine. Who'd have thunk it? After that, I'm going to talk a little bit about the championship standings again. It's really come down to the wire for second place, and it's really interesting stuff, I think. I'm going to cover not only MotoGP, but also the 250s and the 125 standings. But I'm going to do that at the very end, because BTV has not yet shown the 125 race and all, and some people might not want it spoiled, so we'll do the usual thing where we warn people a little bit. But before we get to all of that good stuff, there's a couple of news items and some other housekeeping here that we have to do before we start. Okay, both Kenny Roberts Jr. and Loris Caparossi will not be racing this weekend due to the injuries they sustained in Australia. Ducati's bringing in test rider Shinichi Ito to sub for Caparossi, but interestingly enough, Suzuki decided not to do the same with their own test rider, Nobuatsu Aoki, even though he's going to race in Valencia for the final round of the season as a wild card. It's a little surprising about that. I think possibly the fact that it's only been 1 week since Australia and Roberts' injuries, that's the reason why Suzuki made that decision. It must have something to do with it. Chris Vermeulen is going to be racing for Camel Honda again. Bayliss still isn't back. And last I heard, he supposedly might be back for Valencia. I haven't seen a whole lot on him lately, but frankly, I wouldn't count on it. Vermeulen's looking for a top 10 finish after a fairly decent showing at Phillip Island, but I wouldn't count on that either. There's too much talent on the grid, guys that know their motorcycles in and out, and I just don't think Vermeulen has had enough time on the Honda. I think he's doing a good job. I think he's an excellent rider, but I don't think a top 10 is going to happen. And MotoGPOD listener Paul from Australia, who never told me his last name, did send me a couple of interesting items. First of all, he took a whole bunch of great photos at the Australian Grand Prix at Phillip Island, and he was nice enough to upload them all to a server. I've put a link in the show notes and on the MotoGPOD homepage so you guys can take a look. One thing, though, when I looked earlier this week, that link was working and the photos showed up fine and they look great, but just a little while ago I was getting an error. But I think that error has to do with my internet connection here at home. Previously, when I checked, I was at work. So, you know, let's just give it a try and we'll see what happens. If it's still broken, I'll put another note in the show notes and so forth saying that the link is broken, and maybe I'll contact Paul and find out what's going on. And the link is just too long to read on the show. It's one of those ones with numbers and question marks and all that business. So just go to MotoGPOD.com, and there's going to be a link right there on the front page. Okay, Paul also gave me a little news tidbit that was real interesting. Lucio Cecinello, who, that is the Lucio from Team Carrera Sunglasses LCR in the 250s, he announced in an interview at Phillip Island that the team intends to go to MotoGP next year with Casey Stoner. No bike name was announced, but all he would say was that it has six letters. So I couldn't find anything on the internet about this particular interview or press release or whatever. So it's kind of all secondhand from Paul, and not that I don't trust Paul. I'm sure this is what he heard. But, you know, I don't have anything to verify with. But it does tie in with other news that's been going around in a lot of places about how Colin Edwards and Jeremy Burgess, who's Rossi's crew chief, they've both been saying that they think Stoner is ready to move up from the 250s to MotoGP, which is a little unusual after only 1 year in the 250s. As for six-letter teams, we got Yamaha, which is Jeremy Burgess and Colin Edwards, right? And that has six letters, I think. Then we got Ducati, Suzuki, and Team KR. Those are the ones I can think of, unless, what, Kajiva is still around, or Galera, or something like that. Triumph, but no, that's seven letters, sorry. So, who knows, who could it be? I'm sure it would be Yamaha, most likely, and that would be a super interesting thing to see. Casey Stoner's quite a talented young man, and I think it would be good to bring him up, and plus you'd have another team coming up. Maybe not necessarily another manufacturer, but another team coming up to MotoGP, which would be really good. It'd be good to see more teams moving up. So hopefully that'll work out. And you might remember that last week, WCM writer Franco Battaini failed to make the 107% cut, which means that his qualifying time was more than 107% of pole. Normally this means no race for you, but there at Phillip Island on race day, Battaini was on the grid. and I was a little puzzled by it in my race report. I speculated that maybe it was because Dorna and the FIM didn't want to have only 17 motorcycles out there, but I wasn't sure how they got around the rule other than just sort of ignoring it. Well, listener Yoshi Uchiyama, he sent me the info about the part in the regulations where it says, quote, exceptions to this rule may be made at the discretion of the race direction, unquote. So, thanks, Yoshi. I should have thought to check the rules before I said all that stuff last week. And thanks a lot for bringing it to my attention. It's definitely, it is part of the rules. And basically, I think it's a way to get around that so that, you know, they can do what they want. Last, a couple little interesting statistics. Because Loris Caparossi did not race in Australia, that means that Colin Edwards is now the only rider in the MotoGP field to have scored points at all 15 races so far in 2005. That's quite an achievement. Very good for you, Colin. Proud of you there. And unfortunately not scoring enough points, but that's neither here nor there. You're doing pretty well. Also, Rossi has 11 victories so far this year out of the 15 races. So with two more races left in the season, he has a real good chance to equal or beat Mick Doohan's record for the most wins in a single season, which is 12 back in 1997. Of course, though, Doohan only had 15 races total in order to win those 12, so there's already going to be an asterisk next to that record if Rossi were to beat it, because Rossi's got 17 races. So, but that's the problem with statistics and trying to compare, you know, this year to, you know, 7 or 8 years ago and all that sort of thing. It really doesn't work. There's always some sort of caveat. But whatever. Enough of this stuff. Let's get on to our Turkish preview. Istanbul, not Constantinople. That's where we're going this weekend. I wanted to actually play that They Might Be Giants song called Istanbul, not Constantinople, and I actually even asked for permission and all of that, but it turns out that, you know, I'm small potatoes and I didn't ask the right people and don't really know how to do those things and wasn't willing to pay for it anyway, so we're not playing it. But in any case, Istanbul, that's where we're going this weekend for MotoGP. It's a brand new circuit for MotoGP. It's a brand new year. This year for the world, in fact. It's kind of cool. Formula One race there in August. There have been some Deutsche Touring Masters and GT car racing there as well. But this is going to be the first race for motorcycles. So kind of the inaugural motorcycle weekend in Istanbul. It's a really impressive track. It's about 50 miles outside of Istanbul, a long ways away from Istanbul City. But, you know, it's close to city. It's in the Asian part of Turkey. Because if you'll remember, Istanbul actually is on two continents. I think it's the only city that does that in both Europe and Asia. This track can seat like 130,000 people, so I doubt that we'll see a sellout for the MotoGP, although it would be very cool. It's 5.4 kilometers long, about 3.35 miles, so, you know, kind of a decent length, not overly long, but certainly not short. The first part of it is tight and technical, and the second part is an open, fast sort of circuit with a long back straight with kind of a kink in it, so it's a good, interesting track. It was designed by Herman Tilke, who's the guy who's been doing so many of these new, you know, mega-dollar circuits like Sepang and Shanghai and Bahrain, and I think Qatar is one of his as well. And a lot of these new tracks have been criticized quite a bit for being kind of featureless or not very interesting or whatever. And, you know, sure, like the architecture might be spectacular, or in the case of Sepang, it's spectacularly ugly, but the tracks themselves tend to be a little bit, you know, stop and go, long fast straight ending in a sharp turn at, you know, going to another long fast straight, that sort of thing. But Turkey is a little different. It was very well received when Formula One raced there, and I remember hearing or reading or something, a description of it somewhere that said it was like they took some of the best corners in the world from all these different circuits and combined them all into one. So you've got, like, you know, Eau Rouge at Spa that one at Imola that I can't remember the name of, you know, these kind of corners that are, you know, the famous corners of the world, and combine them all in one. Andy Ibbett at the UK branch of the California Superbike School described it as a combination of Le Mans and Mugello. But in any case, I think it's going to be a really good track with a really good race. You got a lot of elevation changes going on. There's a lot of fast sweeping corners with, like, nice late entries and stuff like that. So it's going to be good fun. So, why don't we right now take a quick audio lap of it? This is a new feature on MotoGPOD. I just invented it. So, okay, the track starts out with a short start-finish straight, and the first corner is a relatively slow left-hander, which makes some heartbreaking and good passing opportunities at the end of that straight. Then there's a long right-hander, long sweeping right-hander, which will be one of the most important corners on the track because it's going to affect which type of tire is used, because the right side of the tire is going to have to withstand a lot of strain of acceleration from second through probably fourth or fifth gear all the way through this corner with the bike leaned way over. And then I got a left-right-left series coming right after that, with two of those being fairly slow first gear corners. After that, we've got a downhill section, mostly straight but slightly angling off to the left, and then another very slow right, which is basically a hairpin that's going to be taken in either first or second gear. This will probably be another good passing zone down here. The track starts to go uphill again at this point, leading to the very interesting Turn 8, which, despite the extremely boring name, is a pretty neat turn. It's a big, long, giant left-hander with four apexes. It was really catching the Formula 1 guys out, and it should be really interesting to watch how the motorcycles handle it, how the MotoGP guys do on that. Then we've got a long downhill section, which takes the rider up to another slow left-hander, which, in turn, leads on to that back straight with that big right-handed kink in it. And that kink is going to be the thing that will control the top speed that the bikes can get up to on this track. And that should be somewhere in the neighborhood of 320 kilometers an hour, or about 200 miles per hour, for those of us that still think in standard. After reaching this top speed, the rider must brake sharply to take a second gear left-hander and then a right-left combination leading onto the start-finish straight. And there, now we're done. So, that was kind of fun, wasn't it? And, you know, when you spend something like $95 million on a track, you get one hell of a track, which incidentally, that same amount, 80 million euros, is what is rumored that Rossi will get for a 3-year deal with Ferrari starting in 2007. I thought that was kind of an interesting coincidence there, that Rossi's 3-year deal and the amount of this track that should last for 100 years happened to be the same amount. You know, I think Rossi should probably go out and build his own super circuit. Okay, back on task here. Another thing about this track, it's very wide, average about 15 meters across the whole thing. Sometimes it's wide as 20, so that's 60 feet. You can get a lot of motorcycles in a 60-foot span, and that's going to mean a whole lot of different lines going through the corners for the motorcycle racers. And it also will have the added benefit of allowing Sete Gibernau, you know, he'll be able to run it really wide a few times without going off track, so that's going to make him happy this race. The track also runs counterclockwise, which is a little bit unusual for MotoGP. They've Australia was counterclockwise. Nicky Hayden says that he thinks this might work in his favor because of his American roots. You know, over here, most of the tracks run counterclockwise, whereas in Europe, it's kind of the opposite. And he said, Nicky said, "I guess I grew up on circuits that run anti-clockwise, whereas these European guys are used to it going the other way around, so maybe it's an advantage for me. My results this season back that theory up, but I'd like to think I can go both ways." Well, watch it there, Nicky. "I'd like to think I can go both ways and be competitive over each of the remaining tracks this season." And I'll tell you, Nicky, it sure did seem to work for you at Laguna Seca and at Phillip Items, both of which run counterclockwise. And you had very good results there, so you might have something with your theory. And because this is a new track, I don't have any good setup information for it, because the teams don't. The Yamaha press release that I normally get that setup information from, they said that Rossi and Edwards are going to start with a different base setup on each bike, but using a neutral setting that'll enable them to experiment with various setup ideas. During Friday, the crew and the rider will then decide which machine feels the most comfortable and will then start to make changes to come up with the ideal setting for the race. So I'm pretty sure the other team is going to do the similar sort of thing, and we'll learn more about what the perfect setup is for this bike, for this track, for next year. All in all, it's going to be super interesting, and I will definitely have a race report for you on Monday. Okay, I discovered a really interesting item on the internet the other day. It's the 2006 American Road Racer calendar, and I mean, this is an awesome item. It's got more than 50 action shots of American road racers in action, all including all four of the Americans that are currently racing in MotoGP. You got Ben Bostrom from World Superbike, all the top Americans that are riding in AMA as well. It's all beautifully printed on this big, large wall calendar, 17 by 22. And seeing as how somewhere or another this item had managed to slip under my radar until now, I decided to contact Mark Sorensen, who's the publisher of American Road Racer Calendar, and I want to ask him a few questions. And Mark was nice enough to agree to a telephone interview, so we've got Mark on the phone right now. So, hi, Mark. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to MotoGP OD.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Like I said, we saw the calendar online there. I was real impressed with it. And kind of what gave you the idea to sort of do this?
Well, I just, I don't know. It just dawned on me at the beginning of the season here that we just have so many Americans, so much American talent, and they're all kind of spread out across a few of the series. And, you know, I don't know. I saw some other calendars out there, but there's you know, so much international talent, and I didn't see anything that just really focused on the great American riders we have, so I just wanted to bring them together into one package and just thought it'd be really cool to have a calendar showcasing, you know, all the great Americans we have riding.
Cool. And how about yourself? Maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself and what kind of gave you the impetus to start a calendar, because it's sort of an interesting choice of something to decide to publish.
Yeah, no, it is kind of an odd thing. I sometimes feel weird saying I'm publishing a calendar, but yeah, I mean, like, you know, probably most everyone listening to your podcast here, I'm a motorcycle freak kind of through and through. And, you know, I've been riding for like 18 years on the street, and I've been road racing myself for like 5 years. So just, you know, kind of my love for motorcycles, and then in kind of my day job, or, you know, my profession, I'm an art director in an advertising agency, and I hire a lot of photographers, and I work with a lot of good printers. And so I just kind of thought, when I had the idea, it just seemed logical to kind of put my professional skill set together with kind of passion for racing and everything, and it's turned out awesome. So,
yeah, outstanding. How did you manage to get a hold of all the riders and get them to participate? Did you have some inside connections going on, or just was it as easy as sending an email or a phone call? Or
yeah, I wouldn't. A little bit of both. I mean, I think I got I probably got a little lucky with my first two contacts. After I had the idea, I was kind of playing with it and if it was going to happen. I kind of bounced off a friend I have in moto journalism, and he thought it was pretty cool. And so I got a hold of Jason DeSalvo and Colin Edwards' dad, pretty much both of them, like the same day I got a hold of them, and kind of threw the idea past them. And you know, kind of asking if they'd be willing to sign on to be in the calendar. And they're awesome. They're great. They totally, you know, were digging the idea, liked it. And so that kind of got me rolling. And then my friend that I know in the industry, he knows a lot of the riders. He hangs out with some of them stuff, so that helped. And, he introduced me to some guys at the races, and all riders have just been super cool about it. So it just kind of started happening. Just kind of one by one got riders interested in the idea of it, and, you know, wanted to be in it and stuff, and worked a lot with their managers. The guys that have managers, definitely had to run it through the managers and kind of work with them and make sure that the managers knew us for real, and this was going to be a great product, and that, these guys should be in and be a part of. And, you know, once you get Colin Edwards and a couple of these other big guys in it, the ball kind of starts rolling. And I was just determined to make sure it happened, that I had to, you know, kind of top 15, I would say, you know, 15 for sure, the best Americans in the world this calendar. So turned out good.
Outstanding. And yeah, I mean, like you said, the list is, you got all the top guys. The list is pretty much a who's who of who's going on in American road racing. And I don't see anybody that I would consider that should have been in the calendar that is missing. But is there a rider that you wanted to include but maybe couldn't for some reason or another?
I think it's awesome. I was psyched that all the guys I got in the calendar. I'm totally, like, super happy. I definitely want to make sure all the key players were in it. There's definitely a few up-and-comers I would like to have in the calendar. And, I didn't have the room for them this first year. I was happy to get some of the support team guys on, like Steve Rapp and Jason Pridmore from Jordan Motorsports team. I was able to get them in, and Josh Hayes from Attack Kawasaki. Didn't get his own full month, but they're featured in the calendar, and, you know, hopefully some of these up-and-comers will be in the next year and stuff as they start getting bigger.
Right, exactly. Get their full months next year, too. Michael Jordan, that's a really good thing with all his involvement. And another thing I noticed about the calendar is that the photography is great. You got some really beautiful shots in there. Did you commission photographers, or did you use existing shots, or do some of it yourself?
I shot some of it, some of the smaller inset photos. I shot, but, you know, definitely knew I had to have great photography. And, from being an advertiser and art director in art direction, pretty picky about it and stuff. And I was lucky enough to be able to hook up with Andrew Northcott, who shoots the whole MotoGP series. And his photography is just amazing. He shoots all the covers of Road Racer X. And through him, I got a hold of a couple other shooters that shoot like World Superbike over in Europe, and got a hold of some of the guys shooting in the States here. And just kind of out of that, just put together a stable of great photos and was able to, you know, buy existing photos off these guys that they're already shooting for the magazines and whatnot. And, you know, just bring them up huge, larger than life size, pretty much, you know, just great impact from the photography and the calendar. I knew that was what would really, you know, sell this thing and make this thing a great calendar. So, you know, able to get some great talent in the photography department too.
Cool. That is cool. What's your favorite shot in the calendar?
Probably my favorite shot in the calendar probably is either, maybe two of them, probably either the January main photo of Nicky Hayden, and he's coming through a tight turn. He's got just a smoke visor on, and morning sun is hitting him, and you can see right through his visor the focus in his eyes. It's a pretty awesome shot. And then we also have another shot in the beginning of the calendar of Colin Edwards going through the Corkscrew at Laguna Seca, and he's got Valentino Rossi right behind him. So that's pretty awesome, having the Corkscrew with Colin Edwards going through it, and, you know, Rossi appearing in the background there. So those are probably my favorite shots in it. But, you know, they're all awesome. I mean, there's over 50 shots, and, you know, definitely all are great shots.
Cool. Yeah, that one was a good one with the Colin Edwards and Valentino. It's a really nice shot. Did you have any internal arguments amongst the publishing staff about maybe which rider was going to get which month or anything like that?
No, I mean, it's kind of funny because we were kind of thinking, and maybe for next year, we were hoping to maybe get a lot of the guys in the right month with their birthdays, but I was kind of afraid to ask these guys what their birthdays were this first year. You know, thought maybe that they'd expect me to buy them a birthday present or something. So, yeah, just kind of put the, you know, those guys, you know, who knows what they want after I start asking their birthdays, but, you know, we just kind of put them in the months and just made sure there was a, you know, separation of, you know, 1 month's MotoGP guy, next month's, you know, a guy from the AMA series and whatnot. And, you know, the cover shots were a no-brainer after the USGP with Hayden and Edwards going 1-2. We pretty much knew we had to have those two guys on the cover of the calendar, so that turned out awesome.
Yeah, cool. And, yeah, speaking of the USGP, I noticed that it's listed as a holiday in July, so I thought that was kind of funny. It's a three-day holiday with travel time and everything, I hope.
Yeah. Isn't that fun? I just, you know, as publisher, I was kind of looking at it, and we were going to press right after the USGP, and just the energy from the USGP was so just awesome, and everyone was so happy in the States to have GP racing back in the country, and, you know, Edwards and Hayden, you know, Hayden Edwards going 1-2. I just thought, heck, I'm putting this on the calendar as a holiday, you know. It's like, why not? It's our calendar. We're publishing it. Darn it, you know, USGP is now official holiday if you get the American Road Racer calendar.
And speaking of the USGP for 2006, are you going to have any kind of presence there, maybe a booth or something there?
Yeah, we probably won't have a booth there just because it's the middle of summer, and we'll probably be, you know, pretty dormant with the calendar then. But, you know, hopefully we'll be there in some form. Maybe we'll, your listeners can look for that umbrella girl wearing the American Road Racer t-shirt. You know, hopefully we'll get something like that, or, you know, hopefully we'll be there with Dorna giving us some media passes for it.
Yeah, that'd be cool if you can get those. That's awesome, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Dorna's definitely a little harder to get the media passes with, so hopefully this next year we'll be in there and spreading the good word about the American Road Racer calendar.
Yeah, I know a little bit about the difficulty of working with Dorna as far as the media. And actually, talking about media, are you getting any attention from the mainstream media, you know, motorcycle magazines and so forth here in America?
Yeah, definitely. It's been real positive. At the last AMA race of the year at Road Atlanta, we had some calendars hot off the press, and I was able to show them around at the track a little bit to some of the journalists there and stuff, and everybody was like real psyched about the calendar. You know, basically everyone was showing it to us, couldn't believe like it's better than they thought it was going to be. So we've had Road Racing World do an editorial on us, and Road Racer X magazine, I think, gave us some time in their Racer X column online, and we're hoping to get on Speed Channel's Two Wheel Tuesday with Greg White, hoping he's going to give a mention to us. We saw him at the race and then showed it to him, and he's pretty psyched on it. So yeah, you know, hopefully we're going to get some more attention from some of the mainstream magazines too. It's been a good good year for motorcycles in the press with the USGP, and hopefully we'll be able to ride on that a little bit too and get some coverage of this.
Cool. And now, is this calendar going to be sold in stores, or is it, how can somebody buy one of these calendars?
Good question. Like that question. Well, this first year, it's pretty much exclusively being sold and distributed through AmericanRoadRacer.com. Again, that's AmericanRoadRacer.com.
Okay.
For all your listeners.
We'll put a link on the website, too.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. We basically just did a limited print run this first year just to kind of hope to break even and get this thing off the ground level and get out there and getting everybody to see that, you know, we got a great product and make sure, you know, all the racers managed on board. And, you know, next year we'll hopefully have some bigger and better distribution options. But, yeah, this year we're pretty much doing all sales through AmericanRoadRacer.com. So hopefully everyone will click over there after clicking on MotoGPOD.com and order themselves a calendar.
Yeah, that's cool. Is there any kind of special offer or anything that you maybe want to extend to MotoGPOD listeners? Or?
Well, put me on a spot like that. Uh-oh. Why not? You know, I think MotoGPOD listeners, why don't we do like free shipping for rest of October if they just go on the website and order one, and why don't they just type in GPOD after their first name in the shipping section, and we'll get on free shipping.
Okay, so just type in GPOD after their name in the on the online form in American Road Racer. And I guess that's probably only going to apply to addresses in America?
Yeah, that's only going to be probably, yeah, that's, we have to
that's
limit
cool.
that to the U.S. addresses because overseas shipping would get a little pricey. We'd probably lose money on that. But yeah, for all your, let's say for all your U.S. Based listeners.
And of course, anybody that is an international listener, something might be able to send you an email with inquiries or something, and it is probably going to start building up, I guess.
But definitely, you know, if there's any of the international listeners interested, definitely, you know, still go to our website and there's a spot to contact us, and we can give you a price on shipping to where you're living. And, you know, of course, I'd like to get these things out around the world, but, you know, depends on if any of the international listeners are really digging all the U.S. guys and a calendar of just the U.S. guys.
Okay. Well, all right. Thank you very much for being on the show with us here today, Mark. It was, you know, really nice chatting with you about the calendar. I wish you the best of luck with it. It's, like I said, it's an awesome product, and I hope to see the, you know, the 2007 and 2008 version, and hopefully you'll have more racers than you have months for, you know, soon, if motor racing continues to build. And for the listeners out there, that was AmericanRoadRacer.com, all one word, AmericanRoadRacer.com, and I will put a link on the website, MotoGPOD. So great. Thanks a lot, Mark.
Thanks for having me, Bob. I think your show is awesome too, and I'm really glad we could be on the show with you. And you know, I think it's a great product, and I think your podcasting is awesome. So glad to come together with you for a little interview.
Awesome, thanks.
All right, I recorded that interview the other night, and I apologize because I was actually using a different microphone and everything, so you may notice a big difference between now and that interview. I'm trying a different setup here, and so far it's working out really well. But I'm also using some borrowed equipment that's quite expensive, so you get what you pay for. In any case, about that interview, I'm really glad that Mark agreed to talk about the project. It's a really cool thing, and I also really encourage you guys to check it out at AmericanRoadRacer.com. It's easy enough to find. AmericanRoadRacer.com won't take you long. It's a fast page to load. One thing he did not mention in the interview is the price of the calendar, which is only $15.99. Pretty fair price for such a great calendar. And don't forget, MotoGPOD listeners, if you order before October 30th, so you guys have a week, if you order for October 30th, Mark is going to ship it for free. That will save you $4. And like he said, unfortunately, that's only for the U.S. listeners or U.S. addresses. But I'm sure that if you contact Mark through the contact page that's on the AmericanRoadRacer.com website, he'll give you the best deal that he possibly can for international shipping. Just, you know, sort of asking what the price is going to be. So take a look at the site, and don't forget to tell them that MotoGPOD sent you. Remember, if you put GPOD after your name in the little fill-out contact form when you do the order thing, he'll knock off the shipping. Okay? All right, let's take a look at the standings again, because Australia really shook things up in the MotoGP standings. Not the MotoGPOD standings, just the MotoGP standings. As you know, the championship may have been over several weeks ago after Rossi clinched it in Malaysia, but the race for second has not ended, and it is hot as ever. We've only got two races left until the long, excruciating, horrible off-season, but we've still got four or five riders with a serious shot at second. Well, let's say three riders with a serious shot and five with a mathematical shot, but let's take a quick look. Okay, we got tied at 170 points, Nicky Hayden and Marco Melandri. Hayden is officially in second, even though the number is the same at 170 points, because Hayden has a race win in there, and that breaks the tie in points. But both of them have, you know, obviously have a very serious shot for the runner-up spot. In fact, and this is going to be kind of fun, because it's impossible for either of them to clinch it this round unless Hayden wins it and Marco doesn't score any points, meaning that he comes in less than 15th place or that he DNFs. That would put Hayden 25 points up on Melandri, and Melandri could not catch up with Hayden even if Hayden DNFed at Valencia and Melandri won, because then they'd still be tied on points again, but Hayden would have more wins, you know, two victories to Melandri's one. On the other hand, if Melandri wins in Turkey and Hayden scores no points, then that would put Melandri up 25 points on Hayden, but there'd still be that chance that Hayden would catch up at Valencia. And in that case, I'm not 100% sure what happens. I'd have to, they go down to the next, you know, who has the most second places, that sort of thing, to find the winner, actually, is what they do. So, because they'd both be tied then at 195 points with two wins each. But that's a whole lot of ifs, and big ifs at that, so, you know. But easy to say, it's going to go down to the last race. It pretty much has to. And the way these two guys have been riding lately, one of them will get it. It's going to be one of these two guys. And I'm going to go with Hayden, just because he seems a little bit stronger than Melandri lately, the past few races since Japan, even allowing for Melandri's, you know, fantastic race in Qatar in his second place. I just think that Hayden seems to sort of have a little bit more going right now. That could change. I mean, it seems to swap back and forth. You know, these guys have good days, bad days. And also with Istanbul being such a big unknown, and therefore more or less of an even playing field between all the riders, nobody knows it, nobody doesn't know it, I think that Hayden is going to have a leg up because of his counterclockwise theories, partially, but mostly because he's got stronger guys giving him advice on the Repsol Honda team. So unless the factory Repsol Honda guys share a whole lot more information with Melandri's, you know, Telefonica, Movistar, Grassini racing team satellite guys, I think that that's going to make a difference. And I don't think they share quite that much information. Kind of depends. But you can bet that Irv Kanemoto and these other guys in their Honda camp at Repsol Honda, you know, they want Nicky to come in second. So they're going to do what they can. And I think, you know, these guys have so much experience for so long that they've got a lot of valuable stuff that they can pass on to him, new track or not. But just because I think that one of them, Marco or Hayden, is going to end up second, that is not what fourth place Colin Edwards wants to hear. Edwards has 162 points right now. He's 8 points back only from Marco and Nicky. And his consistency has kept him in the top six of the standings for quite a while here. But lately, he just hasn't been consistent enough. He got a fourth place finish in Qatar, but other than that, he hasn't done any better than sixth since Donington. His second half of the season has definitely been a little pokey when you compare it to his first half. So while Edwards has a strong mathematical shot at second, I really don't see it happening. In fact, I don't think he'll be fourth place in the standings after this weekend. So, sorry, Colin. The reason that I don't see it happening, first of all, disaster would have to strike both Hayden and Melandri, and while that's of course totally possible, there is another rider out there that wants to take second quite desperately, and that is bearded warrior Max Biaggi with 159 points right now. He's only 3 points back from Hayden, from Edwards, excuse me. Biaggi got no points at all in the last two rounds after he crashed out in the first lap at Phillip Island, and then he retired with a mechanical in Qatar. But Max has had a pretty strong season other than that. He could conceivably pull it all together and catch up, and I would not be surprised at all, like I said, to see him get past Edwards in the standings after this weekend's race. And incidentally, this weekend's race is quite an achievement for Max, and we've got to give him a big shout-out and sort of a happy anniversary thing. This is going to be his 200th consecutive Grand Prix racing start. He has not missed a race in 200 races, and that's 13 years. So, you know, how many of you guys can say you haven't missed a day of work in 13 years? So that's really a pretty pretty good. That's it's quite an achievement, and it's unlikely to be beaten anytime soon. Rossi has an incredible number of consecutive race starts. It's over 150. I think it's 155. But, you know, once Biaggi quits or retires or whatever, gets fired, Rossi's still going to have to go for 3 years without missing a race, you know, just to start catching up. So, and realistically, the way things are going, looks like Rossi's going to Formula One. So, whatever. That sort of puts it all in perspective. That's a long time. Okay, back to the standings. And like I said, congratulations, Max. Okay, Loris Caparossi, because Max Biaggi was in fifth place, Loris Caparossi is in sixth place, 148 points. But since he is not racing this weekend, he's done. It's just going to take too many of the guys that are ahead of him to not score any points at one or both of these races for him to pull it off. Sorry, Loris, you had a great last part of the season. You really did. And, you know, it's a bummer that you got injured. I'm sad for you, and I hope you're back for Valencia. But you're not getting second in the championship. Okay, 7th and 8th place set to Gibernau and Alex Barros. They have 137 and 129 points, respectively. They do still have a mathematical shot at 2nd place, but forget it, it's not happening. So, that's the MotoGP standings and the battle for 2nd. But what about the support classes? I don't really talk about these guys often enough, and if you aren't watching the racing of the 125s and the 250s, you really should be. These guys, they really know how to race. The machines are a lot more closely matched. The grids are bigger. And overall, it's just some fantastic racing. So, if you have not yet watched the Australian 250cc race on TV or however you'd like to watch it, you might want to turn off the podcast. I'm going to have to spoil it here, but they already showed it on Speed TV last Tuesday, so at least it's been on TV here in the United States, which is more than you could say for the 125 race, which hasn't even been on TV yet. I watched it on MotoGP.com, which I guess that is what that subscription is for. So I'm going to talk about both of those. I'm going to spoil it. So if you haven't caught up on those races and you want to stop, you know, goodbye. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Please do return on Monday for the race wrap-up. Okay, hopefully we didn't lose too many people. But the 250 championship is now over. After Casey Stoner's disappointing crash out of the lead in Australia, Danny Pedrosa locked up the championship with a win. Second place wouldn't quite have done it. He still would have been a few points short of locking it up. And I think Pedrosa knew that. So after he did some math in his head while riding around at, like, you know, 150, 160 miles an hour, he carefully stalked Sebastian Porto for the entire race, happy to stay in second place until the very last part of the very last lap when he drafted Porto and won it. It's nicely done. The guy's got some serious racecraft. It's going to really be a lot of fun watching him when he comes up to MotoGP next year. He's got the same sort of scary killer instinct in some ways that that Rossi does. And I think once he sort of develops that, it's really going to blossom and shine. But one thing he does not have is Rossi's, you know, charisma and camera-friendly attitude and everything. And it's not that, you know, Pedrosa's a bad guy or anything. It's just he's a little, you know, robotic in these interviews. Hopefully he'll work on that. But it is difficult. You know, he's a young guy. Okay. So in the 250s, Stoner remains in second place for the 250 championship, and he's pretty much all but untouchable there with 213 points compared to Danny Pedrosa's... oh, boy. What's Pedrosa got? I don't have it in front of me, but it's more than 50 points away from 213, isn't it? It's 264. So, third place, Andrea Dovizioso has a mathematical shot at second, but he's 42 points back from Stoner at 171, and that's a lot of points to make up in two races. So, yes, possible, likely, no. It looks like Stoner's going to get the second place for the 250s. For the 125s, we still got a battle raging to win the championship. That one has not yet been locked up. First place Thomas Luthi and second place Mika Kallio are separated only by 12 measly points, with 224 and 212 respectively. Third place is currently held by the not a very good listener, Gabor Tomaxi, with 165 points. So Tomaxi can't catch Luthi at all, and he's not very likely to catch Kallio, so the championship is down to either Luthi or Kallio. And the way these guys are going, you know, well, there's barely a cigarette paper between them, to sort of coin a phrase. In the last 7 races since Donington, Luthi's had 3 wins and 2 second-place finishes, and Kallio's had 2 wins and 3 second-place finishes. They've just been battling all season long with each other, and it's really been great to watch, and you know, these are the two guys to watch. And the reason that I said that Telmaxio is not a very good listener is this. You may remember that Tomaxi and Kallio are teammates for the KTM factory effort, and that in Qatar a few weeks ago, Tomaxi pulled a last lap drafting pass on Kallio and won the race by, like, just a fraction. And it brought down a hail of criticism from team boss Harald Bartel and the KTM factory and all that, who came out and said that there had been team orders in effect, even though they lied through their butts about it during the race, and that Tomaxi was supposed to let Kallio win, you know, more or less, and that the, you know, basically Tomaxi might be screwed for a ride next year because of it, and so on and so forth. And I talked about the whole situation in the October 7th podcast. I don't really want to go all over it again. If you want to look at it, it's MotoGPOD 2005-10-07. So, despite the team orders being crappy, because we know they are, even though I think they're necessary evil, blah, 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 you'd think that Tomaxi might have learned. But no, because in Australia, he was pressuring Kallio enough in the last few laps of the race that it broke Kallio's rhythm enough so that Kallio only finished fifth. He was in third, and I think he probably had a pretty strong chance to get up to second or so. Whatever, he ended up dropping back to fifth. And behind Luthi, who won the race, Koyama, who took his first, second, Simicelli, and Pacini. And that changed a two-point lead that Kallio had when he was going into the Phillip Island round into the 12-point deficit that he has now. So, you know, who knows? Maybe Tomaxi said, the hell with it. I might as well show him what I can do, or what. Or, like I said, maybe he's just not a good listener. So, as you can see, all the classes have some really good stuff going on, and these last two races are going to be good ones across the board, 125s, 250s, and MotoGP. Even though the championships are over in the 250s and the MotoGP races, you still got each race can stand on its own as a very entertaining spectacle. Okay, that's going to do it for today's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed the new microphone. I certainly enjoyed it. It's a lot more comfortable than the other one. Thanks very much for downloading and listening to the podcast. And as always, feel free to send me email, motogpod@motogpod.com. Questions, comments, hate mail, whatever you want to send. I don't care. I like to read it. It's all good stuff. And Monday we'll have a wrap-up for the Turkish Grand Prix. Until then, don't forget, check out AmericanRoadRacer.com. Take a look at that calendar. And until then, I will talk to you on Monday, and goodbye. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.